You are listening to Your Health. Good morning. And today I have Maggie Stuckey. She is an author, and we're going to talk about soup night. Welcome.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
Yeah. Well, and let's see. A couple years ago, we talked about a gardening book you wrote.
Yes.
And it's fun to it's fun to keep up. So
thank you.
In October, you made a presentation about this book at the co-op's beer and talk at the Fort George. And
aren't those things fun? I just love them.
They are like a window into a world you don't know about.
Yes.
And that one, when I read in the co-op newsletter that you were coming and what you were going to talk about, I knew not only did I want to come, but I wanted to implement. And so I saved it, and I actually pulled it off and went and got the book, went home, and then we decided we would do this program. So talk about where Soup Night, the idea of Soup Night came from.
Well, Soup Night is the name of the book, and it came from a neighborhood in my hometown of Portland.
I haven't done any of them yet.
Yeah.
They look
yeah.
fun. So after the break, we'll talk about my group,
okay.
Soup Night. But let's go up to that point, talking about where people can get this lovely book.
Well, here in town, in Astoria, the wonderful little bookstore called Lucy's, I know that they have some. In fact, when we leave the studio today, I'm going over to the store to sign whatever copies they have.
Mm-hmm.
The two bookstores on the Long Beach Peninsula across the river, Adelaide's in Ocean Park and Time Enough Books in Il Waco, I know they both have some.
Okay. And in Portland?
In Portland, they usually have some at the various Powell stores.
Okay.
And they have had them at Broadway Books, which is a lovely, small, independent store. I always feel a little bit hesitant about this because they may have had some books yesterday, and maybe they, by the time somebody gets there, they don't. But they will always order it, and they will happily order it.
Okay, that sounds great. All right, let's take a break. When we come back, we'll talk more. You're listening to Your Health, and we'll be right back. We're back. In case you're just joining us, you're listening to Your Health. I'm Ann Goldin, and I'm with author Maggie Stuckey, and we're talking about her latest book, Soup Night. So when you did this research and you found soup nights all over the country, did you think, oh, maybe we're not going to hell? Yeah, as a country?
Like. Yes, I did. That's a wonderful way to put it. I certainly did, because I would have imagined, had I not known better, that in very big cities, people would have the inclination to kind of pull inward and keep to themselves and just socialize with a few people that they knew.
Mm-hmm.
But in fact, I found exactly the opposite. Those are the places where people really want to reach out and develop a real neighborhood, develop a real community. It's quite wonderful. I mean, I'm not a sociologist, but I think something's happening there that somebody ought to study.
I think so. And one of the things that that I tasked you with was to find out what we know about what happens when people function in groups.
Right. When I was doing the original research, I kept coming across small references that would kind of go like this. Recent study has shown that people with a lot of social connections are healthier or live longer.
Okay.
Or are less likely to develop dementia. And, you know, recent study, blah, blah, blah.
Right.
I thought I'd look into that a little more. And I did indeed find some very serious research has been done. And it's been going on for years. testifying to the fact that people who have a strong network of social connections have the benefits to that. First of all, they're obvious. If you live in a neighborhood where people know each other, the crime goes down because people know what's
people are looking out.
People are looking out. Kids get a lot of help, and people living alone know that they're more secure because their help is right at hand. But the more subtle thing is physical health also improves. There was a what has come to be called a landmark study in 7,000 people in California, started back in the 1960s. But the whole thing was about their social connections. And then they did a 9-year follow-up after the study was over. And what they found that women who spent time with friends 5 or more times a month, just 5 times a month, that's once a week, were 3 times less likely to die during that follow-up period, completely independent of any other health factors. So then I found that there's a group of researchers at Brigham Young collected 148 different studies and extracted their findings and sort of summarized them and analyzed them, which actually turned out to be over 300,000 people in aggregate. And they found that people without social relationships were twice as likely to die during the same thing, during the follow-up period. But the thing that fascinates me is it also had a direct connection to people's physical health. Loneliness, which is the opposite of social connection, is twice as harmful to our physical health as obesity. It's worse than not exercising, and it's equal to smoking 15 cigarettes a day. So, the other thing that came up often is offers some protection against developing dementia. Two recent studies, and they're both in 2011, group at Harvard University monitored 16,000 adults who were 50 and over for a period of 6 years. And those who connected with family and friends were the least likely to show memory decline. Same year, group at University of Michigan studied specifically the value of social engagement, found that even 10 minutes of talking to another person improved cognitive flexibility and memory in older people. So being lonely makes you sick in a very real physical way, which is kind of amazing when you think about it, but actually makes sense when you think about it.
It does. Okay, so after your presentation, I went home and I thought, I don't know what the future brings. I want to do one in December. I want to avoid the holidays. Oh, I have 2 weeks. And I know that the recommendation was to start a little bit earlier than that to get started. So I just printed up. I picked a day, picked a time, and went around and it was like a Thursday afternoon, and almost none of my neighbors were home.
Right.
So the ones that were home, I talked to, which were like maybe 3, and I had a nice walk.
Right.
And then on Saturday, I convinced my husband to come with me, and we did the same 4-block region, and many people were home, and we talked to lots of people. I had one neighbor who, while I was talking to him, he put it in the recycling bin.
Oh my gosh!
In front of my face,
and no.
I thought, oh, I guess he's probably not coming. Anyway, and 11 people showed up, and we had a fabulous time, and people definitely wanted to do it again, and so we did it December 12th, and one of the neighbors wanted to do it in January, and we just had our second one, and we had 5 new people.
Oh, wonderful.
And then we had a couple people who couldn't come, and what already has happened is the people that missed were sad. They were really unhappy. You know, they were like, we have to go see our kids, which, yeah, of course, you know, of course they want to see their kids.
Right.
And it was Martin Luther King's
right.
holiday weekend and the kids had time off. Right. So they went, but they were actually unhappy that they were missing. And of course, I was unhappy. And we wanted our daughter. We thought she was going to be home, but she had to go back to school and she missed. And we were all sad. And the other adults were sad that she wasn't there. We still haven't had any children there. But all the people that are there are talking to their friends and their neighbors and the people they work with. Everybody in Astoria wants to do soup night now.
Oh, wonderful, wonderful, wonderful. I love it. That pleases me so much. My goal is that this time next year, there'll be 1,000 soup nights around the country, not just 50.
Yeah. Well, and okay. So at our second soup night, I mean, I really tried to stick by, you know, what you recommended. The host of the second soup night had, when we came into her kitchen, she had a big pile of bowls and spoons, and a lot of us had our own, and she said, you can use mine, and we all did. And I think, oh God, washing however many bowls and spoons is no big deal, and I agreed with her that seemed perfectly fine. And it'll be interesting to see which way it goes, because she didn't say anything about bring your own, which I had put in. And then we discovered another thing. You know, I'm allergic to gluten, and both of the soups were barley soups. Uh-huh. One was a vegetarian and one was not.
Yeah.
And I was sad. And there was bread and there was wine. There was wine and there was beer the time before. And I made a dessert this time. So we've had different things. And I think we're going to, you know, it'll be interesting to see how it goes as time goes on.
Yeah.
We have a date and a person for February.
That's wonderful. That's absolutely wonderful. Well, the group in Portland, I keep coming back to that. That's my touchstone because it's the one I know the best. That block has a block party at the end of summer, and they put out a sign-up sheet, and it signs up. I mean, people actually fight for the privilege of doing it because everybody loves it so much, and so the list gets filled up, and that's all there is to it. It just basically runs itself after that.
Like the August party, you put up the schedule for the whole year.
Right.
That makes sense.
Right.
And then people would knowing that was coming, know what their schedule was. Oh, I'm going to be out of town in July, so I'm not going to do that one.
Right. And then people send out a reminder because.
Now, how do you send out, by email?
It's email and also a little physical flyer. In this case, the one I'm referring to, it's just one city block. So it's 18 houses. And they just make a little half-sheet flyer and walk up and down as a reminder. They try to stick with the same day. It's always a Sunday, and they try to make it be the last Sunday. But the host has the option to change that if they need to. A reminder is useful. As I said before, nobody wants to be late. Nobody wants to miss it. What's touching to me, and I kept hearing this over and over again, is how much people love what they've accomplished, and they are so proud of it. If they have visiting relatives that come in at the same time, they grab them by the hand and they say, oh, you got to come with this. You got to see this. You're just going to love it. It's so great.
I can't wait for that to happen for us. Well, we've expanded a little bit. I think I invited what could have been 30 people, and 11 came the first night.
That's quite good.
And then the second one, I think we had three of those people couldn't come, and five new came. So we ended up with,
a little bit more.
13. Yeah. So there were a total of 15 people there the second time.
That's great.
Yeah.
That is really good. I just had a conversation a few days ago with a woman in Morton, Washington, who I know fourth hand, who received a copy of the book as a present. She's older. She started a soup night of widows, including some women who were in their 90s, who don't like to drive at night, which I totally understand. Heck, I'm getting there myself.
Ditto.
and therefore, they don't have a real easy way to get out and socialize. And many of them are really isolated, which equals lonely, which equals mildly depressed, which equals all these other bad health things we've been talking about.
Dementia and death.
So she just kind of took charge and got this group together. She arranged for somebody to pick up the ones that don't drive. And they absolutely love it. She's told me she has a waiting list now of people who want to come because she can only fit so many in her little house.
Oh, so she has it at her place every
time.
She
does. Uh-huh. So far, she's only done it twice.
Uh-huh. Well, you know, the other thing is there are infinite versions of how you could do this.
Right.
I mean, you could do it in a assisted living facility.
Absolutely.
It doesn't have to be in a neighborhood the way we think of neighborhoods. Apartment complex.
And one of the easiest ways was a group that I found outside of Tucson. They have a community clubhouse kind of in their development. And so there's a big kitchen and a big dining hall.
Oh, nice.
Makes things really, really easy. So they can easily handle 30 or 40 people.
So have you run into a group doing it out of an apartment?
Yes. A lot of the people that I spoke with in the Boston area and in New York live in apartments because everybody lives in apartments in those cities.
Okay.
And you just have to have a large enough space. What happens is, you know, people sit on the floor, they sit on the piano bench, they sit, you don't really have to have a table because you can eat soup out of your lap, you know. You have a bowl.
I don't really like that idea. We actually bought some of those lightweight long tables and put them in the living room just to make, and I wanted everyone to get, since none of us had ever been in any of each other's houses, most.
Yeah, right.
I really wanted us to make sure that everyone spoke to each other. So I wanted us to sit at the table together.
Right.
So now I think that's kind of what our group is doing.
I agree with you. I consider that ideal. Mm-hmm. One of the most
we might have to buy more tables.
One of the most interesting groups I found is a small neighborhood art gallery in Brooklyn, New York. And that's what she does. She sets up one long table so that you're forced to sit down with somebody, and it's probably somebody you don't know.
Mm-hmm.
And she does it deliberately.
Yeah, well, I'm hoping that next month that I will sit with people that I haven't gotten to speak, you know, or sit next to before.
Yeah, yeah.
But it'll only be our third one, so I think eventually we'll get to know everyone pretty well. I had never been in any of our neighbors' houses.
Wow.
They had never been in our house.
Well, there you go.
And so now we're all getting the experience, and we got a tour of our neighbor's wonderful old home.
Oh, nice.
Last time, and everyone was so excited.
Yeah.
And that was one of the reasons I wanted to go.
It is.
Aside
from all the other benefits, it is just so much fun.
It is. It's very fun.
Yeah.
Yes, way fun. Well, and this has been fun, too, and I look forward to many more soup nights. Are you in the midst of a new book?
I'm in the midst of thinking about a new one. It's not even at a point I can even talk about or even verbalize to myself. I'm not trying to be secretive. It's just a big mess right now, a mental mess
until
I get it sorted out.
Oh, right. So if people want to find Soup Night, they can go to a local independent bookstore and find it. And I'm sure other places that you didn't mention have it, like Cannon Beach.
Yes.
Good.
Actually.
That's great. And I think it's a great reference to have, even if you're not starting a Soup Night. But certainly if you're starting a Soup Night, this is the how-to, which is really easy. But you've got a recipe. A recipe for anything you want to make in the soup night category.
Right.
It's very fun.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for coming.
Oh, my goodness. Thank you.
Yeah, this is a blast. I've been looking forward to it, and I'm looking forward to my next soup night. And, I can't wait to see what your next book is.
Thank you. Me too.
Yeah.